This is full-time Catholic radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Hudson, welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us. Guest on the phone who's been part of a very interesting and I think important movie project, which she's going to tell you about. Megan Harrington is senior producer for Family Theater Productions, and she oversees the management of production on several films. She does budget, she does staff, she does talent and casting, scripting and logistics. She was producer for The Dating Project. Today we're going to talk about a movie that she has produced and co-written entitled Pray, the story of Father Patrick Peyton. And Megan, welcome to Church and Culture. And the first question I want to ask you is, how many people listening will recognize the name of Father Patrick Peyton?
Well, thank you for having me, Steele. I'm so glad to be with you. And I would have to say very few. This is my guess, based off my own lack of knowledge of him. And in screenings or feedback, it's like, how come I've never heard of this person? They have heard most often the family that prays together, stays together, so we kind of joke, he's the most famous person you've never heard of. That'd be my bet, is that very few.
By the way, after I had read about him, Megan, I sort of was kicking myself like, you know, of course I've heard, you know, of the Rosary Crusade, but his that I didn't know his name, I felt very guilty about.
Do not feel guilty, Deal. A lot of people did not. A lot of people were in the same boat, again, including myself.
But he's such an important figure in American Catholicism, especially in the 20th century. He's such a central figure. Tell our listeners a little bit about him, and then we'll talk about the movie itself.
Okay, well, Patrick Peyton was born as the sixth of nine children to John and Mary Peyton in Adimas County, Mayo. They grew up really poor. In fact, he describes his family as materially poor but spiritually rich. And one thing that John and Mary did is they brought their nine children together every night to pray the rosary. And the impact that had on Father Peyton, he would talk about it the rest of his life, of the image of his parents kneeling, specifically seeing his father. When he was younger, he was a little rebellious, had a little bit of a temper, wanted to be a priest, but couldn't get in. In that time, Ireland had an overabundance of people wanting to be a priest, and he had a lack of education and a lack of money. So then he was going to get married, and you know, that turned out not to be the route for him. And he set sail with his brother Tom in 1928 to come to America to be a millionaire. And he lands in Scranton to be with his sisters, who he's very, very close to, Nellie and Mary. And he tries to find work, and he can't, and his sister wants him to work at the cathedral, but he just doesn't want to do that. He wants to stay away. And not that he wasn't still going to church or anything, he just doesn't want, you know, I'm done with the priesthood, I'm not going to be a priest. Well, he ends up, that's the only job he can get. It's a very tough time in America. And night after night, with the Blessed Sacrament and taking care of the church, that longing just grew in his heart and soul, and the Holy Cross came and did a mission. And he just rekindled that fire in his heart to be a priest. So he joins the Holy Cross and is sailing through to become a priest and gets and contracts tuberculosis in a really, really severe case, has a dark night of the soul.
Now, where do you think that was? Was that a case of being in steerage for 10 days on the trip to New York?
You know, there's a lot. We'd wonder about that. It could have been something he had been carrying with him from Ireland, even. that it maybe manifested itself. Don't know the origin of where it came from, but it could be the stairs. It could have been back home. But it presents itself, and he's in bed for a year.
So he's 19 years old. This is 1928. He's 19 years old when he arrives in the United States with his brother. And has he already decided on the priesthood at this point?
No. He did not want to be a priest. Well, I should say, he's just like, I'm putting that out of my mind. You know, and his sister, Nellie, who he loved and who she sacrificed so much for him, she wanted him to be the janitor at the cathedral. And he first was like, no. And pretty soon, you know, that's where he ended up. And that's how that desire came alive again.
Now, this is the cathedral. This is what cathedral?
The Scranton Cathedral.
St. Peter's.
Sorry, the cathedral. Okay, St. Peter's Cathedral.
Right. And so he's the janitor. And he meets Monsignor Paul Kelly.
Yes,
and all of a sudden, he's a sexton. Tell everybody what a sexton is, because I can't define it off the top of my head.
Well, I think it's interchangeable with janitor. He's taking care of the church. He reposes the Blessed Sacrament. I think it's just maintenance for the church and churchyard. Bell ringer. There's a lot of different duties, but I think it's
maybe
interchangeable with janitor.
Yeah, Peyton said at the time it was just another war name for janitor. But I think I'd rather be called a sexton myself.
Yes.
So Monsignor Kelly then gets it personally interested in this 19-year-old from Ireland, and he pushes him toward finishing high school and entering the novitiate. Now, how does that work out?
Well, it works out really well for him. And he ends up moving on to Holy Cross and to going through proper seminary.
And so he went to the Congregation of the Holy Cross in Notre Dame, Indiana.
He did, yes.
And he finished high school there, and then he went to the Moreau Seminary at Notre Dame. And he graduated, and then he went to, in 1938, went to Catholic University and spent a year in theology, went back to Notre Dame, and a miracle occur to these tubercular patches in his lungs, correct?
It is. So again, he was there for a year in the infirmary in South Bend, and it was basically the surgery that would mutilate his body and probably result in death, or both, or they said you could pray. But a real key point of that story and his turnaround is kind of what happens to all of us sometimes. Someone comes into your life. In his case, it was Father Haggerty, Cornelius Haggerty, who came in and reminded him of the faith that his mother and father had given him, that their parents had given them before them and passed on, and really challenges him. Like, your Mary's going to be a 50%er or a 100%er, and it's up to you, so you have to believe. And that was a turning point in his dark night. That was a turning point in the way that he called out and pleaded to Mary to help him. He really, really wanted to be a priest.
Yeah, he prayed his rosary, and at the end of a novena declared himself cured by Mary's intercession, and the doctors confirmed it.
Yeah, and then no explanation, really, for it, besides, I mean, really, only explanation would be prayer.
So in 1941... And let's remember, he arrived in America in 1929. He and his brother are ordained together. And is the fact that, does this miracle then lead Father Peyton then to become a warrior, a prayer warrior for the rosary? Is that what happens?
Oh, yes. So he's still sickly. You know what I mean? He's cured, but you wouldn't know it because of the way what he did with his life. But, you know, his body was recovering. And he's sent to Albany, New York to kind of rest and rebuild himself there at the school. And he's sitting there, and I think it was a late January, might have been even before he went to Albany, and he just realizes, okay, it's World War II, families are being pulled apart, what can I do? And he remembered the faith his parents had given him. He said, the answer is family prayer. So he knew right then that his mission was going to be life work to do all he could to champion family prayer. Now, at that time, it wasn't the family that prays together. So that wasn't even in the works at that point. But his decision that family prayer would be the focus of what he wanted to do to repay Mary for the gift of being healed and being able to become a priest.
Now, from there, he would become one of the most well-known, well-connected, sought-after priests in the country, and on top of that, would become friends with Bing Crosby, Grace Kelly, James Cagney, all the Catholic Hollywood stars. And he must have had, beyond his charism, he must have had a lot of personal charisma.
Oh, yes. This was a force of nature. I think the one thing that we heard during interviews and in research as well, of, why did people do this for him? Why, how did he get XYZ? And it, time and time again, it was the humility that he possessed and the purity of heart in which he was really wanting to bring families together in prayer. And they could see that in him. And we had one priest say, that would be a really difficult thing to remain humble in all those ways when you're with the rich and famous, when you're with popes and presidents. But that was a real defining quality, I think, that I'm sure he had to work on, but he made that a priority, and that drew people to him because he was pure of heart.
I'm talking with producer Megan Harrington about Father Patrick Peyton, and she has co-written and produced a movie that's coming out very shortly entitled Pray, and the story of Patrick Peyton. And before we go specifically onto the movie, I just want to point out that, Father Peyton was so famous that on a trip to São Paulo, Brazil, and the Philippines, he drew over 2 million people to his rallies. I mean, that the fact that I didn't know anything about that, and I'm supposed to know about Catholic history in America, and I feel ashamed, absolutely ashamed. I mean, He helped to produce over 600 television and radio shows. He had some film projects, which I don't think went through or were ever actually completed. So whose idea was it to do a movie about this remarkable priest, Megan?
Well, Family Theater Productions is responsible for that. And it's founded by Father Peyton in 1947. It's in the heart of Hollywood still today. And I actually wasn't working for Family Theater at the time. They were part of the Dating Project. So that's how, we kind of came to know each other's work and work more closely. And I met with Father Duffy, who runs the organization, and they were looking to do a comprehensive biography. And when he became declared venerable in December of 2017, I think that was the switch that was like, that moved it to green light, that moved it to, okay, we're going to get this moving now. And I happened to be available and had the great opportunity of starting as a contractor and then working for Father Peyton's organization.
So his organization is still extant? It's still thriving?
It is. It is.
And this is the Family Rosary Crusade?
No, Father Peyton, it's called Holy Cross Family Ministries, and there are a number of organizations under that umbrella, and one of them is the production company, Family Theater Productions. They have Family Rosary. They have offices and missions across the world. So his ministry grew and expanded, but the production company that he started in 1947 does still remain in Los Angeles.
That's amazing. In other words, his work is still ongoing, still thriving.
Yep.
That attests to his spirituality and his true charism. And as you said, in 2017, he was declared venerable. I mean, does that necessarily mean that he will continue to be considered for sainthood after that?
Well, I know he is. They are examining some miracles that are attributed to him, or that people believe are miracles. So they're examining those that move him along the process. I hope one day, I mean, to me, he is a saint. Personally speaking, having met him, quote, met him, it was just life-changing. But there's no guarantees that he'll all the way through. But I sure hope I'm there when they do name him.
In 2001, his formal cause of canonization was introduced at the Holy See. And after an investigation, the results were presented in April 2015 to the Congregation for the Causes of the Saints in Rome. So obviously this thing is working, you know, this cause is working its way along. So
yes.
Who helped you write this script for the film?
Matt Donlan, who's an incredible storyteller, writer. He and I worked on the treatment, the outline, you know, kind of immersed ourselves in Father Peyton's books, works, people who knew him, talked to him. So Matt Donlan just instrumental in the process. And then, you know, the second phase of storytelling is the editing, where new things come to life. And we had a great team, our director, John Sipity, and John Lewis Kayla, who's the editor. You know, a team effort, you know, when you get to that second phase of editing. But truly everybody on the film deal, I mean, the director and editor are Protestant, and they fell in love with Father Peyton, and Father Peyton really impacted their life. So he really crosses the divide in terms of his call for prayer. It's just, we need to pray, and that central theme resonated with them as well.
Well, I notice on IMDb it's already rated very highly. It's got an 8.4 rating. Which is,
That's, you know, great news.
Well, you know, you got to do your research, Megan, when you do radio show.
Right.
And, but I saw the film. It was sent to me about a month ago to watch in preparation for this interview, and I just found it delightful and moving and educational. I mean, it's the kind of film that can change people. I'm sure that's what you guys were up to.
It is. I mean, I think when there really was once you kind of started reading, and even when you just saw the pictures, you know, before we even looked at any documents, you're Holy Cross, and there's this crowd, like you said, I think it's San Paulo. And just going, how does that person have that many people there listening to him? It's just intriguing right away. And then as you peel back the layers of him and his life and his work, he's also very accessible, I feel, just as an ordinary person who knew his purpose and mission from God. And I think that kind of helped all of us as we were going through this, make him accessible, make him real. And make him alive. Like, he's gone, but he's still alive. Today, he's still fighting for families. He's still at work. His legacy continues. And we could feel that across. We just wanted to provide the viewer just to tell an entertaining, inspiring story that would draw them into a story about a man who just really had incredible perseverance and faith in God.
He, you know, he looks like a rock, but you know, in various pictures of him, he looks like a rock, but then when he smiles, it's like a heart melting smile. He seems to have been a kind of a man's man, but with a great deal of sense of connection to people that he met. In other words, he was immediately connected with people he met, I bet.
And Dennis Roberto worked for him for 30-some years, and you know, it's kind of a little, when he first was hearing about him and he was going to interview for the job, he's like, oh, you know, can somebody be that? But he said when he met him, he looked him in the eye and he said, nice to meet you. I mean, it's exactly what you're saying. I think, you know, he really was sensitive, and that connection with the Blessed Mother and that motherly love. He had that, you know, strongness of manliness, but he also had that tenderness that his mother and his sisters and then the Blessed Mother instilled in him. So, yeah, he was definitely a figure that you were the only, they say it so, I believe, is you're the only person in the room. If he's talking to you, he was talking to you. Every person was important.
Now, he died at the age of 83 in 1992. Did he work all the way up to his death?
Yes. I mean, until he obviously could not anymore lead the Little Sisters of the Poor in his last. But he was still active, and I'm sure to a lesser degree, but his mission was right till his last days.
And how did he die?
Well, he had a lot of, even throughout the course of his life, again, you would not believe it if he accomplished traveling and all the things that he did. He had a lot of different health issues. He had heart failure. He had diabetes. He had just his body, I think, over time wearing out. He used it completely and for the glory of God. And it just, I think, tired out.
We certainly don't blame him, right?
No. Oh, my goodness. No, I got tired. Like one lady said, I got tired just reading about him. It's true. I mean, think about flying right now. And imagine it then. I mean, people are smoking. It's not as comfortable. There's a lot more things. And he was all over the world. I mean, it really is astounding, his stamina.
Well, I'm looking at his own page on the International Movie Database, IMDb. And what I see here is that he hosted a family theater series for a year. That he, which actually had three seasons, I believe, of that. And he had I think the project The Savior was one that was, and actually directed by Joseph Breen, who was so famous as the fellow who was the responsible for the code. The Hollywood Code, or he ran the Hollywood Code for many, many years, starting in the mid-1930s. So, I mean, there's another example of his connectedness with all kinds of, you know, Catholic luminaries.
Oh, he was so connected. I think it goes back to your point of then where did he, you know, he ended up not being as well-known as you might think, knowing all of this. So he was a lot behind the camera, too, besides the rallies, obviously, very much in front. But, yeah, it's
well,
sort of this awakening for people of this Catholic saint, potentially.
Well, Megan, his short film, The Soldier, 1962,
mm-hmm.
starred William Shatner.
Yes.
I mean, that's,
yes.
You know, he's brought right at the beginning of his career, and his,
yeah,
you know,
he worked with everybody.
His movie that he made, the Redeemer, 1959, is rated at 7.7, and again directed by Joseph Breen, and the English version, it was made in Spanish, but McDonald Carey, who had a great voice, did the voiceover for the English version. And one of the reviewers says, this is one of the largest and better versions done already about the life, the passion, the death, resurrection, ascension of our Lord Jesus Christ. So he obviously had a huge ministry in Latin America and the Philippines.
Oh, definitely. He is still very much they're very much aware of him in the Philippines, in embracing and different television programming. He really made an impact in the Philippines. And the thing about, we did have a director say who we talked to while filming, you know, he may not have, he hired the best people to do the job. You know, he may not have known exactly what he was doing when he started, when he went to the crazy dream and I'm going to go to Hollywood and we're going to get actors.
Right.
But he found people who did, and he surrounded himself with people who did know what they were doing and people who were really excellent at their craft. And, you know, that's why the names you're reading and the outcome of the product was good, because he realized he needed to have the right people do the job.
I wonder if part of the reason we don't know so much about Patrick Peyton is because of the celebrity of Fulton Sheen at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had one of the highest rating television shows during the 50s.
And they were friends, actually. Both, I'm sure that's not surprising to anyone, but he had Father Peyton on his show and had counsel from Bishop Sheen. But yes, Bishop Sheen was much more of a household name with his primetime TV show, and also an incredible figure for the Catholic Church.
I'm talking with Megan Harrington, who is the co-writer and producer of a new film that is opening right away, and it's entitled Prey, the story of Patrick Peyton. I believe it's opening in Detroit, what, on Friday? And I know it had a pre-release that did very, very well. I guess you were just sort of testing it. After this short break, I want to come back and I want to ask you about what approach you took, what went into it, and what it was like making it. We'll be back in just a moment.
Old St. Mary's Roman Catholic Church in downtown Detroit in Greektown invites all to a special Sunday High Mass in the Tridentine form. Experience the authentic Catholic traditional Latin Mass, including the church's rich musical tradition of Gregorian chant and sacred polyphony. Please join them Sunday, November 15th at 10 a.m. Free and guarded parking is provided in the church's lot. For more details, visit oldstmarysdetroit.com. That's oldstmarysdetroit.com.
What is the most spontaneous form of prayer? The Catholic Catechism says it is the prayer of petition. Through prayer of petition, we express our awareness of our true relationship with God. We are not creatures of our own making. We did not begin ourselves, nor will we end ourselves. We are not the masters of adversity. We are sinners who know we have turned away from God. Our prayer of petition is already a turning back to Him. In the risen Christ, the Church's petition is buoyed by hope. The first movement in the prayer of petition is asking for forgiveness. That is, says the Catechism, a prerequisite for pure and righteous prayer. In the hierarchy of petitions, we pray for the kingdom, then what is necessary to welcome and cooperate with its coming. When we share in God's saving love, we understand that every need can become the object of petition. Christ is glorified by what we ask the Father in His name. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
On the next Cresta in the Afternoon.
Our topics during Cresta in the Afternoon toggle between church teaching and then using that teaching to shine a light on our world. We'll look at Christ and culture, church and world, religion and public life, from abortion to Zechariah and everything in between. Biblical criticism, Hollywood productions, academic debate, family and love, prayer and spirituality.
Cresta in the Afternoon from 4 to 6 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
Megan Harrington, who is a senior producer for Family Theater Productions, and we're talking about a movie she just produced and co-wrote about the life and work of Father Patrick Peyton. The movie is entitled Prey, the story of Patrick Peyton, and it's opening in many cities this coming weekend. Megan, could you mention a few of the places it's opening so people can be on the lookout?
Yes. So, and there's a full list at PrayTheFilm.com. It'll be, like I said, Detroit, the Bel Air Luxury Cinema, Woodbury, Minnesota, Charlotte, North Carolina, Lansdale, Pennsylvania, El Campo, Texas. Those are just a few of the, and a number of different places in Iowa and Savannah, Illinois.
Well, having seen it, I would really encourage people to go see the film and keep your eye out for it. If it's not opening in your city anytime soon, I'm sure it'll get there eventually. So what was it like to be on this set making this film?
It was really, in so many ways, life-changing. And I grew up, I'm the ninth of 11 children, and we had to pray, we had to, and that is the word, it was not an optional, come out in the morning before school at 7 and pray the rosary. And I remember, just through the life of learning about Father Peyton and just reflecting on my own parents, just a gift that was, that I appreciated, but I think profoundly appreciated, and the role of parents. And to hear Father Peyton's own family members in Addie Mass, and that was a really special trip, where we went to Ireland. We walked where he walked. There's a baptismal font in the church where he was baptized. We did some of the reenactments there. His parents' gravesite. The homestead where now a new house is, but his original home stood. It just, because once you learn about him and you feel like the presence of Ireland and what that meant in his life, he carried Ireland with him always. To the people who worked for him, who worked with him, whose families knew him personally, then to the people who were just impacted by his legacy, that they turned on a show on EWTN and saw a documentary and were like, hey, who's this guy? It was just faith-affirming, too, and it really made me reflect personally on the importance of prayer and the gift that is. And, when God asks you to do something, he'll give you the tools to do it. And it's just so many levels to it. So hearing stories and meeting the people, I just can't say enough about how that shaped the story, really. And I know you've seen it. I'm just hoping that came through, the authentic way that these people spoke about him and their experience with prayer through him. And everybody was touched. There's certainly individual stories of all of us who have a moment, a Father Peyton moment, or more than one. And he's somebody I consider a friend now, and I ask him for help and intercession, and I hope that when families or individuals see that, they'll be the same, because he's definitely still working.
Well, tell us who played Father Peyton.
Well, this is funny and confusing. His Father Peyton was played by Father Pat Peyton, his nephew. And it was so great, because he's also like 6'4". And I wanted to give him a giant hug, because I would love to have given Father Peyton a hug. So he was just a massive figure as well, and he white hair, the whole thing. So it was really special that he was the priest that was playing, quote, Father Peyton in these reenactments. It was his own nephew.
What was his name again?
Father Pat Peyton.
Pat
Peyton.
You know,
it can feel like it's real confusing. Yeah.
And where is he? Where does he live?
He's in Sligo.
Oh, he's in Ireland. He's an Irishman.
Yep. He's an Irishman.
But he came over.
Where those were set. No, we went to Ireland. And we interviewed him. We interviewed his brother, his nieces. And then we did the reenactment with him in Ireland, which was, again, also very special.
No kidding. And tell us how you... In the writing stage of this, you every person, has a history, a chronology, a succession of events and turning points. What approach did you take to telling the story?
Well, we took a biographical approach, because Father's story is laid out, like you said, and there are books that talk about his story, and he has a book, All for Her, American Apostle. And so we studied those books, different documentaries, and we wanted it to be biographical, because they Family Theater wanted a comprehensive biography, so it had to be part of, we weren't telling just his Hollywood story. We weren't just talking about the rallies. It was all-encompassing. So, but also what we wanted to do is make it modern in the sense of his legacy continues. So we wanted to have families who were practicing the rosary, practicing family prayer, modern day, and hear their stories and hear their struggles and hear how prayer, the rosary, Father Peyton, helped their lives. Because we didn't want it to feel like something that was in the past. Oh, here's a story about somebody, and this is what he did back then, that it's really not relevant today. We wanted to make it relevant today. And that was really difficult, actually, because the family, you know, you do a focus group screen, it's like, well, that family kind of came out of nowhere. So it took a lot of time and energy and just whittling at making the family fit, because we really wanted them in the story. And, you know, over time, hopefully that you felt that, is that they do fit in the places that they are and kind of help us tell the story, tell Father's story. But it was very important that we had examples of what prayer and family mean today intertwined with his biography, which, of course, is in the past, to make it.
How long was the actual shoot?
Well, we started in January, like really started January research treatment story. Then we were done. It was all together 12 months, which I was about 12 months, which I'm going to submit it as his third miracle. We're going to see if that's oh, it's very grueling. But it was about in total a year.
Now, what, you know, one of the most controversial aspects of Father Peyton's life was his involvement with the CIA and the 1964 coup in Brazil. And as I read about this, it seemed to me that he wasn't playing any kind of major role in that, even though he was being funded to some extent by the CIA in his, you know, his prayer rallies.
Right. And that's also the same conclusion that we came to. I mean, even says in the film, it's like, he was like, okay, people want to help with prayer? Great. Let's do that. And when it became clear what was going on, then, you know, he was no longer participating. But, yes, a very, in an innocent, way we came to this.
Well, it was the Cold War, right?
I believe so.
And I mean, it was a time when
I'd have to phone a friend. Deal.
You what?
I'd have to phone a friend for a final answer.
Well, take it from me. It was the Cold War.
I will.
Innocent anti-communism that gripped the country for, you know, nearly a decade. And, you know, in the attitude, which culminated tragically at the Bay of Pigs, you know, and I think, you know, during the 50s, it was very easy to see anything that was getting in the way of communist control or influence in countries in the Western Hemisphere. You see that as a good thing.
Yeah, Father Peyton was not political. He didn't engage publicly, but he really was the champion of, you know, he wanted to oppose atheism, obviously, and communism, but he's committed to the cause of family prayer. So he was just grateful, honestly, when people wanted to help and assist in that effort. But it is a complicated part of his story. But I agree with you, is an innocent part of just his whole focus was, I want families to pray together, and we have to find a way to do that.
You know, but that's the only thing in doing my research about him that is, you know, controversial or, you know, could open angle of attack on his integrity or something like that. I mean, otherwise, he seems to... I mean, he did get some criticism for hanging out with Hollywood stars, which is to be expected. But, again, I don't get any sense that he was a man who lived a luxurious lifestyle at all.
Oh, no, he did not. His room is filled with Little Sisters of the Poor in Hollywood, and excuse me, in San Pedro, and it's modest. He never in his life had a drink.
Now, wait a minute, stop. He was Irishman.
Yes, he was.
I don't believe you.
He was young. you don't have to believe me.
Phone
a friend. You need to phone a friend.
How can an Irishman, he's from Mayo, right?
Oh, he was from Mayo. Well, a mission came through and talks about the evils of drinking, and it certainly wasn't a difficult part of the history of some of the Irish. So I think he swore it off when he was a young boy that he wasn't going to.
That's heroic virtue for an Irishman.
It was extremely heroic virtue, and he also said, the stars, he said, people would say, hey, why are you working with so-and-so? And he really felt that it would help them to work with him, and they were doing good programming, they were doing values-driven shows, and these stars would help with the mission, because it would help him spread the mission. And so you still have that today, though, too, why are you working with XYZ? But he really just firmly believed it would help them to be part of his production. They were good productions, and it would help get the word out about family prayer.
By the way, I want to mention to our listeners that there's a website you can go to get a taste of the film and the team behind it, and it's praythefilm.com. That's praythefilm.com, and you get to see some actual footage of Father preaching, and you also get some videos of Sean O'Malley, Bishop Cardinal Sean O'Malley of Boston, and Archbishop Jose Gomez of Los Angeles recommending the film. So you certainly got some great support behind it.
We did, and we had a great team on the marketing promotional outreach that were able to secure. First of all, it's their time to watch it, but once they did, and Archbishop Gomez and Cardinal O'Malley, I mean, their input, the impact that it had, I'm sure as a priest as well, he's a wonderful model for the priesthood, and I think the film, while not, essential, just part of his life, is may make a young man go, hey, I want to be a priest, but a depiction of the priesthood that I think we need right now in our time.
I see that you've gone to some Christian film festivals and won some awards already. What is it that people like talk about the film? What do they say about it after they've seen it? What really got to them?
Well, one is, how come I didn't know about him? The other is emotional. In some ways, of their role as a parent, if they're parents, and the importance of that, and what they want to get their children. The story of just the foundation of prayer that he had, it can be inspiring for single people, of that devotion and understanding of what's my purpose, what does God want me to do, his extraordinary perseverance, and his ordinary background, upbringing. He wasn't a bishop. He wasn't a cardinal. He wasn't Pope. He was a priest who did the work that Hebrew's Blessed Mother entrusted to him for her son, and he just kept doing it. So I think there's something for us as a accessible again, that people have said, families especially, I started praying with my family, the rosary. We started praying together, or we're continuing to do it. Maybe we're praying the rosary, but we're praying the rosary now. And those are the things where, when we made it, we said, we'll tell this story, entertaining, inspiring, but I want to keep people leaving inspired by prayer, because that's what Father would want. And he has to be part of the story because it's his story, but he wouldn't want it to be all about him. But he'd want people to leave feeling Like, they need to go to their knees in the best way. And
I have
those comments mean the most. Actually.
Megan, I just noticed that on the website, praythefilm.com, you have a section entitled See the Film. And if you click on that, mm-hmm. you have a button for find theaters, where, in other words, where in your state
yep.
the theater is showing it. You also have an individual ticket or group sales button. And you also have a button that's to bring Prey to a theater or drive-in near you. So people
yes.
can help get on the bandwagon for that, right?
That's right. They can get on the bandwagon, sign up, and the form is pretty self-explanatory. What we're looking for is areas where there's an activated audience that is excited about going to the theater and would love to bring the film to them.
The so the reaction that you're getting is one of both amazement that there's this fantastic story about a priest who was so famous, so well known, so widely trusted and regarded that since his death in 1992 has kind of been, at least for many, forgotten. You know, unlike his contemporary Fulton Sheen, and yet we have given us the gift of recovering this story for the church, recovering this story about prayer, the power of prayer and the rosary specifically, and the rosary in the family specifically. I just think what you've done is wonderful, and I know a little bit about filmmaking, and it's a very risky venture. There are a million things you have to keep balls in the air, you have to keep at once, and all the parts have to some point come together. So it's not something, this is extremely difficult and requires a lot of faith as well as a lot of courage, but you hung in there and did it.
Well, I worked alongside the most incredible individuals to bring this story to the theaters and where it is now and where it's going to be going. And that's the only way that anything does get done is within a team, and to be part of the team, to be part of the prayerful team. Everything started with a prayer every interview before every interview of the day. But it was grueling, and it demanded a lot, but everybody knew that it was so much more because it was impacting everybody's lives personally. Father Payton and his story was affecting all of us, that we had to do whatever we could to deliver the best for him. I guess when he was alive, it was very difficult to work for and demanding, so I always joke that difficult in that, hey, you know, it's midnight, what are you doing? And I laughed because I said, he's still very demanding to work for. But he really made us focus on what this was, which was a film about prayer to bring to people right now, unknowingly, in need of prayer. We always are, but especially now. So, again, I'm part of the team. I wish you could talk to all of them, Beale, because they're just amazing and they all have their own stories. But I lucked out completely in this opportunity to help share his story.
Is there one story you can tell without embarrassing or revealing anybody about the impact this film has made either in the making of it or in the viewing of it?
Well, I'm going to share the story of in Ireland. So we were in Ireland at Abbey Mass, and Father Pat Payton, the nephew, who's doing a reenactment, John Sippity, the director, wanted a shot. So it's the poster shot. It's where Father's overlooking the bluff. John Patrick's bluff, he's overlooking. And John's like, that signifies the continuation of his legacy, indicating it's not over. Still beginning. It's just begun, in a sense, after the film ends, because it begins now with you, the viewer. So we asked his cousins, hey, you know, we want to his nephews. We want to go. Is there a area where we can overlook the bluff? And they said, we'll call ahead. And they said, it's soft in rain. Well, in Ireland, if it's raining and they don't think it's going to let up, they pretty much know that. And it was one of those days. And so I said to John, hey, I don't think you'll be able to see the water And John, the director, said, if there's a chance we can see the water, I want to go. So we finish up our last interview with the Peyton family in Adimas, and we're running out of daylight, and it takes an hour to get there. So we pack up all the gear, and we turn around, and they have set the table with beautiful china and monkfish and bread, and they really just went all out in hospitality. And you're like, oh, no, we can't leave. People can't go, well, this is really nice, but we got to – there was something about that moment where you had to say, you know, we have to stay and enjoy this meal. They've been so hospitable. So we sit, we eat, which they probably all really liked because we got to sit down actually for a little bit and eat. We finish. We get in the car. Father Pat Payton is in the car ahead of us with his brother and his brother's wife and the two other nephews. And we go to the bluffs. And on the way there, the sun is going down. And John and Stephen, the VP, and I were praying, like, oh, please, you know, let us be able to get there. We got to get this shot. Well, we show up at the bluffs, and it's just beautiful. There's no rain. There's no cloud. It's just like this gorgeous moment in the sun's going down. Father Pat Payton starts walking towards the bluff, and the sun part, the clouds part, and the sun goes up. And I remember just sitting there, and I said, dear God. And his whole head looks like the Eucharist because it's white, and I'm right behind him. And the Payton family, everybody was just, like, you couldn't believe what was happening. And sunlight, there was sunlight for 10 to 15 more minutes when there should have been sunlight for 5. We got everything you needed. And John Sippity took a picture, and he said, there's our poster. And it was. And I think that was the moment for me, and a lot of us, was Father Payton was there. We were in County Mayo. He parted the skies, and he was saying, hey, I got you. I'm here, and I'm watching.
Well, you know, it reminds me of some of the stories I heard about the shooting of Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ, that things like that would happen from time to time that made a very difficult job easier. It was like a little moment of grace in the process.
It was a single grace for sure, and that's something I will never forget, and how appropriate that would have happened in his county of Mayo where he grew up. You just couldn't write it, Bill. You couldn't even script that.
Well, I want to remind our listeners that the Pray the Film, allonword.com, is a website to go to read more and listen to more about the film and contribute to maybe getting it shown in other places. But, Megan, I want to ask you this before our time runs out. What are your next projects? What's on tap for you to do now?
Well, actually, we're preparing for the release, most likely in February, of a documentary called The House That Rob Built. It's a woman's sports story about a small town, Missoula, Montana, where in 1978, when women weren't really taken seriously as athletes, a former star of the college team takes over as the head coach and ask these women to believe in what they are capable of and to achieve more than they believe they are capable of doing. And he turns it into a dynasty. These are women from ranches, reservations, farms, and he builds a dynasty and a legacy in a little town that you probably never heard of, builds a dynasty, and it really impacts the community and the women. And it's a story of small-town America.
And when will this be released?
That is released in February of 2021. We'll have more details on all of that, those release plans, but that's looking at February.
So has it already been edited?
So if you like prayer, you'll love basketball, deal.
Is it already edited?
Oh, it's finished, yes.
Oh, it's done, okay.
It has distribution through 1091, which is formerly the Orchard, so they'll be taking it out in February. And then we're currently working on different ideas and concepts for put in development and then hopefully to production.
Well, I hope you'll remember me and the radio show when this film comes out in February.
How could I forget? Yes, I would love to be back to talk basketball.
Let's do it. And I just want to remind our listeners one more time, the movie is Pray, the Story of Patrick Payton. Going to be opening at various cities around the country this weekend, And the website is praythefilm.com. And Megan, I want to thank you for being a guest on Church and Culture, and I'll look forward to talking to you again in February.
Oh, thank you, Dale. It's wonderful to be here. And yes, I look forward to February.
We'll do it. And to all of you who are listening, I'll be back with another wonderful guest after a short message.